again, everyone, and welcome to it.
The Daily Daily Color Podcast for the 18th day of June 2019. I'm Derek Hunter. It's a Tuesday if you're playing the home game. I'm Derek Hunter. Thank you for listening. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for spreading the word, rating and reviewing, particularly on iTunes, since that's the biggest distributor. I really appreciate it. I love seeing those numbers go up every day. We're like, oh, you got more reviews. And you read them and you're like, wow, that's really nice. Who is this person talking about who's funny and smart and all that stuff? And then I think that you're drunk. But still, I appreciate it. More than you could ever know. Like I said, I'm really probably the world's best at receiving foot massages, but the worst in the world, at least one of the worst, in receiving compliments. But I appreciate each and every single one of them. We have a lot of stuff to get to. By the way, if you want to enter to win a signed copy of Shannon Bream's book, Finding the Bright Side, email derek@dailycaller.com. I don't think we're going to do the drawing this week. I think we're going to do it next week. That'll give people extra time to enter. And because I think I'm recording an interview on tomorrow, so I'm not going to announce who it is yet, just because jinx and all that stuff. But I want to give people more time to enter, and yeah, and it's my show, so what the heck. All right, lots of stuff to get to, as I said. And I want to start off with this ridiculous, well, you know what, should I just start off with this? I think I am going to start off with this, because I knew I was going to get blowback. I knew I was going to get criticism. I knew that when you speak your mind, you're going to make people angry. You're going to get people upset. I'm not going to name any names, but I am going to read this comment I got yesterday. It was about the flag burning, but it wasn't necessarily about what I said about flag burning. Somebody wrote out there, I'm not going to say who, that I'm a devoted listener to your podcast, but today, the 17th, was less than listenable. Nice job droning on and hating on Candace Owen. Had to turn it off. Do better. No, and there's a very specific reason for that. That is, there's no reason to do better. Being honest is as good as it gets. No one is above reproach, above criticism, not a single human being. I wrote back and I said, then you missed the point about the importance of free speech. People you like can be just as wrong as people you don't. They're all free to be, or at least should be, and none should be above having it pointed out when they are. When somebody is wrong, it doesn't matter if they're on your team. They're making your team look bad, and they're giving a wrong impression of what your team stands for and believes in. Candace Owens was calling for having the citizenship stripped from people who burned the flag. That is insane. That is totalitarian. And I will never support that, ever. So pointing that out and criticizing her for that is not something I will apologize for, and not something I think I have to do better on. I think it is important to call out your own side. Let's just apply that to John McCain. John McCain was routinely criticized by everybody on the right, myself included, and it was absolutely justified. But 9 times, or at least 8 times out of 10, when it came to voting, he was voting with the conservatives. So should that logic then apply to him? No, of course not. Criticize John McCain for where he's wrong and praise John McCain for where he's right. It's very simple logic. You're allowed to disagree with people just because they're elevated through social media to be some sort of spokesman or superstar doesn't make them immune from criticism, and it never will on this show. And I'm sorry if that's what you want. This show is designed to give the truth. It's not designed to give you what you want. So if this guy unsubscribes, then he unsubscribes. And I'm sorry to see him go, but the point of freedom is to be free. And the point of free speech is to be able to say what you believe and what you can back up with facts and data, not to then just throw red meat to people who agree with you. There are enough people out there willing to preach to the choir that there are, God knows there are plenty of podcasts that just give you the same thing over and over every single day. And if that's what you want to hear, if you want to hear that everything is rainbows and sunshine, then you can find that. You can construct your reality any way you want it to be. That's not what this show is. I think that's the strength of this show, is that people come here and hear the truth. And sometimes those truths are uncomfortable truths. And sometimes those truths are in conflict with what people you like present as the truth. And if that makes you uncomfortable, then you need to be made uncomfortable. Everybody needs to be made uncomfortable. You need to get outside yourself every once in a while and look at things from a different perspective. If somebody you like is saying something you disagree with, that doesn't make them wrong. It maybe makes you wrong. It could make them wrong, but it shouldn't make you cover your ears and go, la, 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 I don't want to hear it. It should make you go, maybe I should look at this from another perspective. If this person is more right than wrong, if this person makes really good, valid points often, more often than not, and this thing I disagree with, maybe we can just disagree, what a novel idea, and just let it go. Or maybe I'm thinking about this wrong. Maybe I'm being too emotional and not rational. I wrote a whole book on the subject. But, you know, if he unsubscribes, I'll be sorry to see him go. But I'm not going to change how I do this show just because somebody doesn't like a point I made. Didn't even stick around, apparently, for the end of the point, which was a pretty important point, I think. So, no, I'm not going to temper. I'm not going to say, well, this person is on our team. Quite frankly, I've been involved in the conservative movement for a while, and I haven't heard of her until, like, the last year or so. And I'm not going to then say, well, this person walks on water just because they're popular. That's not the way facts work. Facts are not dependent upon your belief in them. They're just facts. Reality is not dependent upon your belief in it. It is just reality. You can insulate yourself from it all you want. It doesn't change it. All right. So I want to talk about the reality of media. Sorry if that was a little too preachy, but that one just bothered me. It's like, really? Really? You couldn't listen. Then you missed the whole point. There is another Trump scandal brewing in the media, and I couldn't believe that this was a scandal, that this was something worthy of coverage. I would like to think that in a world of 7 billion people going 24 hours a day, the world never stops spinning, that there would be more important things to discuss in valuable cable news time. Alas, that is not the case, at least not on CNN. Did you watch that Trump interview special on ABC News on Sunday night? It was basically all the clips that they put together from Snuffleupagus's interview with the president. I think the president made a mistake in not in sitting down with George Stephanopoulos. He should be doing more and more interviews. The president should, with just about anybody and everybody. But to give Stephanopoulos basically 30 hours of unfettered access to be able to follow him around, ride in the beast, ride on Air Force One, that I don't think was a good move. I think that was a mistake. Give him an hour, sit down, go through the questions, done and done. But the candid moments when dealing with a dishonest media are never going to be framed in a way that is favorable or really even honest. There was a couple of moments. My wife and I had this conversation earlier today about how she thought that when they were riding in the limo and they were talking about polling numbers, and President Trump said, no, let's go off the record for a second, and I'm going to call my campaign manager to find out about this polling data you're talking about, George. My wife thought that was beyond the pale, that they should have edited that out, and the president went off the record. Well, he didn't show what happened next. They did turn off the cameras there, or at least leave it on the cutting room floor, the phone call. He talked about what had happened, but he left it. It didn't show him on the phone, which is fine. That's what should have happened. But there's something you got to know about going off the record with a reporter. You not only have to declare that something is off the record, they have to acknowledge that they accept that it is off the record. You can be talking to a reporter and say, hey, off the record, I think he's a murderer, or, you know, I think he's a horrible person. If the reporter doesn't agree that that comment you're about to give about the person you're talking about being a horrible person is off the record, then it's not off the record. You have to get acknowledgement of it. That being said, that's the problem with the president giving somebody a ride to an event, essentially, and allowing someone to hang around with him for hours and hours and film all of it, is you're going to catch moments like that. In a sit-down interview that is very defined as far as the length of time, you get 1 hour, starts at 2, ends at 3, you don't really have that problem because there aren't the candid moments. That's the way it should have been handled. I think that the president should sit down with, you know, Lester Holt. I think he should sit down with just about anybody and everybody, including members of the liberal media. Be prepared to answer tough questions. He's entering re-election. He won election answering tough questions. He can handle tough questions. Avoiding them won't help. But doing it in a controlled environment is much better than having these impromptu moments. And the one that everybody on CNN, they did at least 3 segments. And these are the 3 segments I could find. I imagine that there were more. I didn't watch CNN all day, and I didn't scour the internet for more examples. The whole staff of this program is me, so my time is limited. But I know they did at least 3 segments on Coughgate. Yes. And this is where I agree with my wife that George Stephanopoulos and ABC News did deliberate bias in editing and handling this. The president's talking about his financial reports, and Mick Mulvaney, the acting chief of staff, coughs in the Oval Office. And the president kind of stops halfway through his answer, says, let's do that again, because he coughed in there. And he says, you know, if you're going to cough, leave the room. Because they're filming something. Microphones pick up everything in the background. I don't know if you can hear it, but my daughter is watching some video over in the corner, some horrible song. You can probably hear it occasionally in the background. The microphone is unforgiving, and it doesn't really miss things. It's just there. It doesn't have an agenda. It's just a device to pick things up. Well, the president then started his answer over. Because, and this is important to remember, in Donald Trump's world, the vast majority of his experience with television is on The Apprentice, where they're in the boardroom. And if somebody drops something in the background while they're having a discussion about who they should fire or whatever, and somebody drops something in the background, they go, oh, wait, stop. Can we do that again? Can you pick it up from where you said X, Y, or Z? And sorry about the 2x4 being dropped over in the background. And then they fix it in editing. They cut that out. And as a viewer, you never know that it happened. The president had to have been assuming that George Stephanopoulos was interested in the answer to his question rather than the pseudo-palace intrigue of the president telling somebody, look, if you're going to cough, get out of the room. We got live mics in here. Normally, and if this were Barack Obama, you know what would have happened. They would have just edited that out, and that would be the end of it. But George Stephanopoulos and ABC News decided to show that. And in that moment, in the, if you're going to cough, get out of the room, don't cough in here, the media found conspiracy, the media found anger, the media found control freak. CNN did a panel discussion on this. Honest to God, there were left-wingers out there talking about conspiracy theories that Mick Mulvaney was coughing to try and distract the president from talking about his financial disclosure forms. Don't talk about trying to interrupt the interview. Wild speculation, and of course, it's the right wing that is conspiracy theory heaven. I don't know if these people listen to themselves. One report on CNN, it's Jeannie Most, so she's kind of the joke reporter at CNN, but her report on this actually captures the tone of the coverage of one single cough and the president thinking, well, these people want a good shot. They want clean audio. Having somebody hacking in the background isn't good. So we'll just start the answer over and we'll go from there. And thinking, because that's how television is done, he thought that they would just edit that out. Instead, they played it. I want to play for you this CNN bit. It's about 2 minutes long, and you'll hear all sorts of voices and all sorts of discussions about Coughgate and what it means and where it's coming from and whether or not Trump is a germaphobe. I mean, all from one thing that was very simple. It was an audio screw up on behalf of Mulvaney coughing with live mics in the room while the president and George Stephanopoulos were talking. The president, actually, if you think about it, was stopping the interview not for his own benefit, but for the benefit of the quality of the audio of in his answer and Stephanopoulos's question. You don't want audio with somebody hacking up a lung in the background. Look, we'll just stop and we'll do this again. And then you'll have a clean copy and you don't have to worry about it. The audio won't be distracted from somebody hacking and coughing in the background. They spun that into a day-long story on CNN. Actually, now that I think about it, John Kasich clip in here was from yesterday as well. So that means that CNN did at least 4 segments on the Coughgate. Let's listen to this for yourself, and you'll see just how awful the mainstream media is.
If you have to wipe your nose, don't wipe it near this guy.
I'm also very much of a germaphobe.
And if you cough during an interview...
Let's hope they get it, because it's a fantastic financial statement.
Prepare to be thrown out like a used Kleenex.
And let's do that over. He's coughing in the middle of my answer.
Yeah, okay.
I don't like that, you know?
Your chief of staff.
If you're going to cough, please leave the room.
Not some intern, but acting chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney. On the bright side, Kim Jong-un would have had him killed. A former campaign staffer told the Washington Post it's something they're warned not to do.
Well, thou shalt not cough.
Imagine how Hillary would fare.
Can I get some lozenge or something?
I'll be right. Every time I think about Trump, I get allergic.
A lot of people kept coughing up the coughing conspiracy theory. That Mulvaney was trying to signal Trump to shut up about his financial statements.
This is my theory.
Right.
I think he was going, don't talk about how you're broke.
Yeah. Anthony Scaramucci tells of the time he had a sore throat while meeting with President Trump aboard Air Force One. The president banished him to the sick bay for a shot.
There I am traveling on the most famous plane in the world. My pants are down and I'm taking a shot of penicillin like I was in the second grade.
The ban on coughing left some wondering, sniffing okay though? Trump has a tendency to order things out.
Hey, get this thing out of here, will you?
From teleprompters to crying babies.
You can get the baby out of here.
But at least he's no Caligula.
What is it?
When a young man's coughing irritated him, off with his head.
I've cured his cough.
Will President Trump keep his head the next time someone coughs? Ginny Mose, CNN.
Isn't that lovely? Now, CNN did at least 4 segments, 4 reports, 4 different events throughout the day, and not just, they didn't just rerun that 4 times. Who knows how many times they reran that. But 4 different times throughout the day, they convened with experts and panels to discuss that Donald Trump, in the middle of an interview, said, all right, you want to do that again? Because that guy coughed over there, and we can do it without the cough. I can say the same thing without the cough in the background. And it was, well, was Mick Mulvaney coughing, trying to distract the president, trying to stop the president from talking about his financial forms? They made a conspiracy theory out of it. It was bad form of George Stephanopoulos to include that in the interview, in the special, in the thing that they ran on Good Morning America. It was ridiculous to do that. It was biased to do that. They did that deliberately. They were hoping to do it because otherwise there's no purpose whatsoever to have that footage in there. You just, all right, cut that out and we'll go right to his answer. Instead, they did it on purpose. And this is why the president should not give access like that to the mainstream media. Like I said, he should be doing more interviews. He's his best advocate. But he should be doing it in an interview setting, in a controlled environment. You have from 1 until 1:20 to ask the president. You set up everything starting at 12:30. You come in, he comes in at 1, you pin the microphone on him, and you go. And then at 1:20, time's up, we've got to move on. The president has a tight schedule moving on. You can't have these impromptu moments, or the media will pick out garbage like this. They will pick out everything they possibly can to try and spin to make the president look bad. You cannot arm your opponents. Use them. President Reagan used the media beautifully. He took their questions, he did their interviews, and he talked to the American people through those interviews. President Trump does that to a certain extent with his Twitter account, although he could tone that down a little bit. He should use the media. Go to them, let them ask the questions, and give the answers that he wants the American people to get. Also, one of the best assets he has going for him, as we discussed with Brent Bozell on the show 2 weeks ago, is that the people, the American people, really do not trust the mainstream media. So when you've got an interviewer constantly interrupting, constantly badgering the president about, no, Mr. President, but you said this before, and you said that before, and you get into an argument like that with them, it helps your cause. It helps his cause. When, even if people are indifferent, if they're lukewarm towards the president as a person, when they see him arguing with somebody they believe is biased against him, that will elicit some sympathy. It will. It works. And the president should take full advantage of that. More than half the country believes that the media is biased. It's like 60% or something. Like, I forget what Brent Bozell said the number was, but it's up there. So making them, it's been an effective foil for the president so far. It helped get him elected. He should continue to use that, but he should continue to use that on his terms. This is far too nuanced an argument for the president to bother trying to make. To be perfectly honest with you, the president does have better things to do than deal with what I've just been talking about. Having surrogates make the case can be effective to the choir, but it's not going to reach as broad an audience as it would if the president sat down with Lester Holt. And Lester Holt started berating the president, started challenging the president. Because people remember when President Obama sat down with news anchors and the glowing, loving, slobbering interviews that he was given during his presidency. They remember that. So when you see what they do to Donald Trump, they say, what is this guy doing? And once you convince people that the media is lying to them about one thing, they'll make the connection that, hey, maybe they're lying to us about other things. And then maybe they'll go online and look up things from a different perspective and get a fuller picture. You can never draw a conclusion for somebody, but you can encourage them to gather as much information as humanly possible so that they can draw the best conclusion, the real conclusion, the correct conclusion on their own. That's why I thought that interview, the access, was a mistake. It was, what was messed up is there was a sit-down interview with George Stephanopoulos. They sat down in the Rose Garden and had a traditional interview. That's all it should have been. Letting the cameras roam around like it's the real world. The president is obviously comfortable in that situation, having been a reality TV star. But reality and politics have very little to do with one another, as I think the president has learned and is continuing to learn. So hopefully this will be the only time that some kind of access, like the White House has announced that the president is going to be giving more interviews to mainstream liberal media outlets. That's fine. That's absolutely what he should be doing. But this kind of roll the cameras wherever you are and catch candid moments stuff should not be allowed again, and I hope it is not. All right, there is other news, of course. Joe Biden. Oh, poor, sweet, nourishing Joe Biden. He went to the Poor People's Campaign in Washington, D.C. yesterday. It is as left-wing as it sounds. It's all about everybody's a victim and everybody's trying to rip off the poor. I'm not sure who wants to rip off the poor. They don't. What are you going to steal from them? But there are, and there is an industry in this country that thrives on making people think that this country is designed and run by rich people ripping off poor people. How they do that, I don't know, but nobody ever asks for an explanation from that. Well, Joe Biden gave his number one priority if elected president. I'm going to play this clip, and I want you to listen to the rambling question. These are two reverends. They're not priests because they're not Catholic. Two reverends. One's a woman. One's a big, big guy. He's always on MSNBC. I can't remember his name. Barber, I think. Doesn't matter. He doesn't say anything in this clip. But and Joy Reid is up there on stage. Why Joe Biden is appearing on stage with a noted homophobe and noted transphobe like Joy Reid, who knows? But it lets you know where MSNBC is coming from. They always, you know, they complain that, oh my God, Sean Hannity appeared on a stage at a Trump rally. The MSNBC hosts are participating in propaganda, active propaganda for the Democratic Party at events around the country, and nobody says boo about it. But listen to the question and then listen to Joe's answer. They really don't like this country very much. And surprisingly, it's not often this happens. The last time I think it happened was in 1984 with Walter Mondale, and hopefully we'll get the same results. If you think about it, it was an incumbent president running against a former vice president in 1984. And Walter Mondale promised that he was going to raise taxes. He was straight up about it. I'm going to raise your taxes. That's what Joe Biden promises, because he says he's going to repeal Donald Trump's tax law. That was a tax cut for everybody. It has helped lead to the booming economy that we have. And Joe Biden sees that and says, you know what? We've got to stop this. We must crush this. Listen to this exchange. By the way, note the question and how much dislike and vitriol and anger from this supposed woman of the cloth is directed towards the United States of America.
So we have a three-part question. One, what are you going to say about this lie of scarcity? Two, how are we going to immediately and fully, not incrementally, eliminate poverty? And three, what can you say about your view on military spending and the militarization and the problem of warmongering that's happening in this country and world?
Number one, we have the greatest income inequity in the history of the United States of America since 1902. And the fact of the matter is, there is plenty, plenty of money to go around. The first thing I would do as president was eliminate the president's tax cut.
First thing he's going to do is eliminate the president's tax cut. Got to get rid of that tax cut, man. People are keeping too much of their own money that they earn. That is an outrage. The government needs it. And love that mentality. There's plenty of money to go around. Everybody should have some. All right, Joe, you wrote a book. Let's have some of that money. I'll check my mail this week and see if I get that Biden check showing up. Something tells me I'm going to be lonely out by my mailbox. Yeah, where's my Biden check, Joe? Where's my slice of your income? Where's my slice of your pension, Joe? You're on Social Security. Where's my slice of your Social Security money? Your government pension, 40 years in the Senate, 8 years as vice president. You're pulling down a pretty penny, Joe, and you're not really breaking rocks to earn it. You're making more than pretty much everybody else. You're in the top 5% at a minimum, probably 1% when you add in all the little side deals and speaking engagements and everything you've got going. Where is my slice? There's plenty of money to go around, Joe. What's the deal? That's that dangerous socialistic mentality. It's not what you earn. It's what the government allows you to keep. You didn't really earn anything, as Elizabeth Warren and Barack Obama put it. You didn't build that. You built a business. Sure, you took a little bit of risk, but you drove to that business on a street that everybody paid for, so you got to pony up as much as we say. We'll just basically, they should change the tax code from what you owe to what you're allowed to keep. That's really what it should be. But all of these liberals, every last one of them, could do something that is unheard of from the left. And that is a little crazy thing called leading by example. Pay.gov, you can cut as big a check as you want to the IRS, and they will happily hammer it. But oddly enough, the Warren Buffetts of the world, they don't write those big checks. Warren Buffett runs around going, I pay a lower tax rate than my secretary does. And he does it in a folksy way. And by golly gosh, it's just not right. It shouldn't be that way. It doesn't have to be. You could take all of your income as actual income there, Warren. You don't have to use the tax code to your advantage if you so choose. But he ain't about to do that. He's going to avail himself of every possible deduction he can get to make his tax rate lower. He'd probably fire his team of accountants if they didn't do just that. Yet, he wants everybody else to pay more because it's fair, because somebody else has less. Well, most of the people who have less, and this could be a bit controversial, but I just don't care. Most of the people who have less earn less for a reason. Likely, very bad decisions made throughout their lives. The culmination of which is where everybody is right now. Every decision you've ever made in your life has led you to the moment that you're sitting listening to this podcast. What is going on around your life and the big picture of things is as more of a factor than listening to this podcast, although I'd like to think we're at least a couple of dots on the painting that is your life. That is the problem. Democrats have tried to insulate, and I know I go off on this all the time, but Democrats, the party, exists to insulate as many people as possible from the bad decisions that they have made. Like a parent. Look, your parents probably tried to make your life as good as, hopefully they did, as good as humanly possible, and try and teach you from your bad choices, your bad decisions, but also then try to mitigate the consequences of it. You threw a rock through the neighbor's window, the neighbor wants to wring your neck, your parents go out there and say, look, I'll take care of it, don't worry, I'll pay to replace the window, and I know you want to beat my kid to a pulp and spank, but you know what, I'm going to punish him, he's going to be grounded, or whatever. Your parents worked as that buffer. Now the government wants to work at that buffer. So there is really no point in life at which you begin to face the full consequences for your bad decisions. You took out $200,000 to go to a school to get a degree in a field that has no real employment prospects? Don't worry about it. Government did it. It's those, the government's got your back. It's those evil lenders. It's the school's fault. It's somebody else's fault. Not you, a sentient adult who willingly signed for these loans, knowing full well there were loans, and you, having not lived under a rock your whole life, understand the concept of a loan. Now you don't want to pay it back. So don't worry. We'll take care of you. The government wants to forgive your loans. The government, I mean, there's this story from last week. I meant to get to this. This is sort of the mentality that the Democrats are trying to appeal to. This is from Yahoo News, or no, it's from USA Today. Eventually, Chad Albright just couldn't take it anymore. The rejection, the depression, the mounting bills. It became too much to deal with all on his own. Quote, I had to escape this debtor's prison. That's what America became to me, prison. So I left. Albright bought a one-way ticket to China and boarded an airplane, uncertain if he would ever return to the country he once considered home. And you think, my God, what in the hell did this guy do? It was 2011, and Albright was 30 years old, starting over in a country more than 7,000 miles away from his life in Pennsylvania, away from his family and his friends, and as far away from the $30,000 he owed in student loans. Yes, this guy fled, Chad Albright, fled to China to get away from $30,000 in student loans. Oh, I just couldn't handle it. Borrowing money for college seemed like a sound financial decision at the time. Albright thought his degree would readily lead the way to a better paying career. With tuition comes high debt. When delivering pizzas was the only job he could find 2 years post-graduation, with the country's outstanding student debt rising above $1 trillion and 1 million people defaulting on student loans every year, it didn't seem like it was worth it after all. Oh, the sad tale of woe. He fled to China, of course, because where else do you go but the world's largest communist country to flee debt? $30,000 in debt, by the way. That is not massive, crushing debt. That's manageable debt. I was expected to make $400 loan payments every month, but I had no money, no sustainable income. College ruined my life. Oh, no, you poor bastard. He's the victim. He's the hero in this story to the Democrats. I wouldn't be surprised if, via Skype, since he's now living in China and fleeing his debtors. By the way, we don't have debtors' prisons anymore, you dumbass. He wouldn't have been thrown in jail. You'd have just been, I don't know, something crazy, like forced to pay what you borrowed. Hey, I wouldn't be surprised if he gives a keynote address via Skype to the Democratic convention, or at least appears in a commercial for Elizabeth Warren. What do you think? How in the hell could this guy rack up $30,000 worth of debt? Well, it's pretty easy. So growing up, it was drilled into Albright's head that college would lead to success. This story is actually written from a sympathetic point of view. His father worked in the railroad, blah, 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 blah. He started delivering pizzas right out of high school to save money. Okay, he's 30 years old when he flees the country. He was working as a pizza delivery guy. He started delivering pizzas right out of high school. So by my math, that's 12 years delivering pizzas. And somehow his student loan debt is his problem. I suspect that this guy has bigger problems that he's not willing to accept, and that the USA Today reporters are not willing to press him on. Because if you're spending 12 years as a pizza delivery guy and you don't own the pizza shop, it's you. I love the sad tale of woe that they tried to instill in this story. It wasn't easy being the oldest student in his classes. Now, he started college when he was 25 years old. I don't know if you know this, but there's not a whole lot of difference between being 18 or 19 or even 22 if you went from the right out of high school and straight through college plan and being 25. The only way you would know that somebody was older is if you really, really looked haggard, which I doubt this guy does. It wasn't easy being the oldest student in his classes, Albright said. His classmates ostracized him, and it was difficult balancing his course load and a full-time job. Of what? Driving pizza deliveries? I wanted that diploma, and I was willing to work for it. Everyone was always telling me it would be worth it. He majored in public relations. A bad decision, dude. You don't need a degree to do that. You can major in so many other things and then work in public relations. The important thing is just getting a degree, unless you're going into a science or a very specific field. Also, I thought, where the hell did this guy go? He went to Millersville University. I'd never heard of Millersville University before, but they're charging, according to the Google machine, in 2016-2017, $11,494. Per year. He graduated years ago, so one must assume that his tuition costs were significantly lower, correct? Yet somehow he managed to borrow enough to basically get 85% of a degree at tuition costs a decade after he graduated. And we're supposed to feel sorry for him. We're supposed to take on his debt. We're supposed to tell him it's okay. He fled to China. There's a lot more going on there than meets the eye. They say he was earning about $1,000 a month in China. Not a large amount by most standards, Albright said, but his rent was covered through his job. And since the cost of living in China is so much less than in Pennsylvania, Albright was able to enjoy his income. He went out to eat with friends, traveled to other cities. Things I never got another chance to do in America because of my student debt. My life was so much better once I left. Why would I ever go back? I hope he's not voting absentee. You should just renounce your citizenship, pal. Become Chinese. See how that works out for you. $30,000 caused this millennial to get into such a panic that he fled the country. Fled to communist China. And Joe Biden, oh, there's plenty of money to go around. We have such huge income disparity like never before. People didn't earn their money. Somehow they stole it. This is the Democrats' mantra. They're a dangerous, dangerous people. The United States used to be the place people fled oppression to, fled to for liberty. Now, when we go the way the Democrats want us to go, there's literally nowhere else to go. I often thought there should be some kind of, you know, rich guy funded. I'd be, of course, perfectly willing to hammer those checks. Rich guy funded Project Life Raft. That is out there that works to create a free country out there where we can go when the Democrats completely ruin this one. There has to be somewhere to go. There's no life rafts left if this thing, if the Democrats poke the hole in the United States like they desperately want. But Joe Biden, you know, the first thing I'd do is repeal Trump's tax cuts because there's plenty of money to go around. As Bill de Blasio, who says it more bluntly but says the exact same thing, there's plenty of money. It's just in the wrong hands. Government should decide in whose hands the money goes. Which is, again, akin to the government deciding through Democrats that all money is theirs. And they'll decide how much they'll allow you to keep. You don't earn it. You curry the favor and good graces of the government, and they allow you to keep things. And then they take the rest under threat of prison. If that isn't totalitarian, I don't know what totalitarian is. No, but crazy Uncle Joe wasn't done at the Poor People's Crusade or whatever the hell it was. He was asked by Joy Reid, again, noted homophobe, noted transphobe, but she thinks right now, so it's okay. Whether or not, how he can get things done with that evil Mitch McConnell in the United States Senate. Mitch McConnell just won't work with Democrats, as if Democrats right now are super duper open to working with Republicans. I love how these people, I wonder what color the sky is in the country that these people live in. It sounds awful because it's horrible and racist and sexist and every kind of phobic you can possibly imagine. But I also imagine that the sky is a different color and maybe food tastes different. But she wanted to know how you're going to work with this horrible, horrible Mitch McConnell. And I want to play this. I have three cuts of it. The last one's a little bit long, but just as an example of how I think Joe Biden is losing his mind. I think he's losing his chips. I think he's losing what he's got left. He seems to have no energy and no enthusiasm, no real excitement. He wants to replace that with talking quickly. He wants to ramble. If you talk really fast, you sound more like the guy who used to sell micro machines and that really fast talker would go blah, 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 than somebody who is really excited. The speed is not a valid replacement for energy and enthusiasm. But Joe Biden here is asked, how are you going to work with those dastardly evil Republicans who won't give Democrats anything that they want? The problem is you guys want stuff that's crap and will make things a lot worse in this country. But listen to Joe Biden here try and explain how he can get things done.
Joy, I know you're one of the ones that think it's naive to think we have to work together. The fact of the matter is if we can't get a consensus, nothing happens except the abuse of power by the executive. Zero. Number one. Number two, there are certain things where it just takes a brass knuckle fight. There's no way to do it. And what you do is when they say we're not going to support you, we do what I did last time. I went into 68 races in 22 states, and they were not blue states. They were not blue areas. And guess what? Remember, I got criticized by a lot of you in the press saying we're going to win back the House. We went over 40 votes. Well, we got 40 votes back, and we beat people who were, in fact, Republicans with mainstream Democratic people going in and saying, look, this is what they're doing to health care. This is what they're doing to. You have to go out and beat these folks if you don't, if they don't agree with you, by making your case. And that's what presidents are supposed to do. Persuade the public. Move people as to what's going on.
I looked. Who criticized Joe Biden for trying to win back, for saying that the Democrats were going to win back the House? In 2018, that was liberal media gospel. It's not only that the Democrats will win the House, it's by how much will they win the House. And of course, they won the House. So Joe Biden, what planet? You remember how you guys all criticized me for saying that we'd win back the House? No, nobody said that. Again, he's rambling. He doesn't know how to answer a question, so he seems to think that throwing a word salad, it's from the Barack Obama school of press conferencing, answering questions. Barack Obama, in an hour-long press conference, would manage to take 7 questions. Why? Not because the questions, well, some of the questions were ridiculous, like, what has most enchanted you about being president? But the questions were pretty direct. They weren't even tough questions. It's just that Barack Obama would talk forever about them. He would go off topic. He would do everything that the media talks about Donald Trump doing, patting himself on the back, claiming things that he didn't have anything to do with, all this stuff that they say, well, this is ridiculous. Barack Obama did those same exact things. When you take 12 minutes to answer one question, it's mostly because you don't actually know the answer. You don't have an answer. So you do what kids did when I used to do when there was an essay test in high school or college. You could answer the thing in 3 sentences, but if you answer the thing in 3 paragraphs, you could A, either throw so much stuff against the wall that you hope that the answer is in there somewhere that the teacher's looking for, or you hope that if you throw enough against the wall, you can distract the teacher into thinking, well, I at least give partial credit because I don't know what the hell they're talking. They just threw everything they knew on this particular subject against it. That's what Joe Biden is doing here. That's what Barack Obama did in his press conferences. Donald Trump will give you an answer that's as long as it needs to be. Probably a little bit longer than it needs to be because he circles back a lot. But in general, he does not hold court for an hour by answering 7 questions. Joe Biden could have given us a very simple answer here. You just have to work together. Instead, he had to make himself out to be a hero. Remember when you guys told me that I was crazy for saying we'd win back the House? Everybody was saying Democrats would win back the House, Joe. What the hell are you talking about? But he wasn't done rambling here. This is, again, a very long answer to a very simple question.
Last point I'll make. Remember with the Affordable Care Act, because everything landed on President Obama's desk but locust at the time, he had no time to explain the Affordable Care Act.
So, again, Joe Biden rambling says that Barack Obama was just too busy to explain Obamacare. That was the problem with Obamacare. Look, there's just too much going on. I can't possibly focus any energy on my major legislative push in the first 2 years of his administration. There was endless debate about Obamacare. The president gave speech after speech after speech in which he lied. If you like, what was it, 37 different times that Barack Obama said that if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor, period. Was he talking about something else? And then in the middle of it, he just says, apropos of nothing, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. And if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Now back to this speech about national security. No, Barack Obama gave those speeches about Obamacare, trying to sell Obamacare to the American people. They just weren't buying. But Joe Biden, he just didn't have time. He was just too busy. Doing what? Making brackets for, the March Madness tournament? Is that what he was too busy doing? Golfing? He sure wasn't practicing his fastball. If you ever seen the guy throw a baseball, he throws like nobody ever told him he was secretly left-handed. It's pathetic, or right-handed, whatever hand he is. He seems to be the opposite hand because he throws like I would throw if I was throwing left-handed. But Joe Biden is delusional. He's lost his mind. He has no freaking clue what he's talking about here. He's just going to keep talking until he comes to a point where either the questioner's eyes glaze over, which it's Joy Reid, it doesn't take all that long, or he thinks he can finally coalesce his ramblings into a salient point. It takes him a while, but I want to say that I think there is something off about Joe Biden. He continues, and this is about a minute long, but it listened to the guy. And remember, the question was about how are you going to get things done if Republicans won't work with you? How are you going to work with Republicans?
Once it got started taken away, all of a sudden we have what we call in Southern Delaware an alder call from all those boys. An alder call saying, oh, my God, I'm for health care. I don't want to take away pre-existing conditions. I want to make sure, et cetera. And so you go out and you beat them. You make the case. You make an explicit case, just like we did for the House. I think we can do the same thing for the Senate. Secondly, you got to make it clear to Republicans that you understand on some things there is a rationale for compromise. For example, when we did the Recovery Act, which the president, as you may remember, the State of the Union say, Joe will do the Recovery Act, $89 billion. And it was done without any waste or fraud, 2% waste, fraud, or abuse. What happened there? We didn't have the votes initially. So I went on and I changed 3 Republican votes. Would you try to persuade? Doesn't mean you can do it all the time, but it kept us from going into depression. And so, folks, look, if you start off with the notion there's nothing you can do, well, why don't you all go home then, man? Or let's start a real physical revolution if you're talking about it. Because we have to be able to change what we're doing within our system. Because you talk about the creed. We the people. We the people, we hold these truths self-evident. We haven't always lived up to that standard, but we've never fully abandoned it. And the moment we abandon it, we lose everything we stand for nationally and internationally in terms of the power of our persuasion. The reason why the rest of the world follows us and we're secure is not because we have the largest military in the world. It's because we not only lead by the power, the example of our power, but the power of our example. And you can shame people to do things the right way.
What the hell is he talking about? Crazy Uncle Joe needs to take his meds. By the way, he said that the Recovery Act was $89 billion. The Recovery Act, the stimulus bill, was $1 trillion. So Joe was off by a little bit. There was no fraud. There was 2% fraud. There's a little bit more than 2% fraud. Remember, Barack Obama jokingly said, I guess shovel ready wasn't as shovel ready as we'd hoped it would be. Oopsie daisy. Yeah, because the jobs that they promised with that did not come. That's what caused the Democrats and the media to create the all new jobs saved or created statistic. And they took credit for everything that ever happened during that time. Well, you know, we didn't create any jobs. We actually lost jobs, but we would have lost more jobs. We saved jobs. And that's what we really did. And the media just acting like a stenographer said, oh, yeah, totally, job saved or created. Of course, you can't prove that you saved a job, but who needs proof when you've got a Democrat on your side? By the way, the Washington Post, see the accountability and transparency and all the good works and no fraud that Joe Biden was talking about. The Washington Post wrote about it because they created recovery.gov, where you're supposed to have massive transparency and be able to see how this money was being spent. It was going to be wonderful. Well, to quote the Washington Post, quote, to build support for the stimulus package, President Obama vowed unprecedented transparency, a big part of which he said would be allowing taxpayers to track money to the street level on recovery.gov. But 3 months after the bill was signed, recovery.gov offers little beyond news releases, general breakdowns of spending, and acronym-laden spreadsheets and timelines. Isn't that lovely? So, Joe Biden there asked, how are you going to work with Republicans? And he talks about winning back the House. He thinks they can win back the Senate. You can badger them. I've worked with them before. But by the way, the Republicans that he persuaded to vote for this boondoggle were Olympia Snow, Susan Collins and Arlen Specter, who shortly thereafter switched parties to become a Democrat and then lost re-election. So how'd that work out again? I forget. It's hard to keep track. Oh, let's quickly talk about little Beto. I feel bad for Beto. He was on with Jake Tapper. He was such promise. He actually believed that he was going to be president, or actually stood a shot to become president. Now he's in also-ran. I do love the fact that he did suck up a lot of money from Democrats, though. Little Beto, sweet, sweet, nourishing Beto, he was on with Jake Tapper, and he was asked about immigration. And Julian Castro has come out and basically said that he wants to repeal the law that makes coming to the country illegally a crime. He just basically wants to open borders. That's what it is. Beto can't really answer this question, mostly because I don't think he's capable of it. He eventually gets around to answering it, but he contradicts himself a couple of times. He gets three bites at the apple, by the way. Let's listen to bite one at the apple.
I want to talk about some domestic issues, too. Your fellow Texan and 2020 candidate Julian Castro's immigration plan calls for the repeal of a law that makes it a crime to enter the United States illegally. Do you agree with that? Should that law be repealed?
I don't know if it should be repealed, Jake, but I think that we should acknowledge that most of those who are arriving at our border right now, especially from Central America, are at their most desperate and vulnerable moment. They pose no threat or harm to this country. And we proposed a family case management program so that they are not held in detention at a fraction of the cost and at an improved rate of showing for their court date or their appointments with ICE officials. We help them to follow our own laws, and we treat them like the human beings that they really are. So policies of caging kids or separating families or metering where we have migrants and asylum seekers wait in Mexico, where they are prey to criminals and to those who would take advantage of the most vulnerable. That cannot be this country. We have to live our values and ensure that our laws reflect our reality and our true interests in this country.
Apparently, our true interests in this country don't involve enforcing our laws or securing our border, though, Beto. I love how these liberals talk about we must live our values. What do you know about our values? What do you... They want liberal values. They live in an insulated world where that's it. If you're not one of them, you're out. You're not accepted. You're ostracized. And then everybody goes, oh, well, everybody's in agreement. Let's just impose this on everybody else. Forget polling that people want this border secure. Forget polling that people are against illegal immigration. The sweet, nourishing, illegal alien should have the gates swung wide open for them, and they should just be able to march into our country. I love how he says, you know, if we release them, they have a much higher rate of showing up than if you keep them in detention. No, I think that keeping people in detention until their court date, just my guess, would mean a 100% showing up rate, I would think, because, you know, you're being held in detention. And holding them in Mexico is horrible because Mexico's a hellhole. Well, that's not really super nice. If you have a hellhole that is crime-ridden just south of your border, why would you want to obliterate the border? Why would you want to get rid of any semblance of a border? That would just seem to me to invite some of that stuff to come across the border. But again, Beto isn't that bright. He also wasn't done. Jake Tapper noticed in Beto's answer there was something missing, and that would namely be an answer to the question. So he asks it again.
Okay, but just to get a straight answer on it, it sounds to me like you think the law that makes it a crime to be in this country illegally, it sounds like you think that that should stay the law.
I think what I'm saying is that in the vast majority of cases, there's no need to incarcerate or to detain migrant families and especially children. But if somebody is attempting to smuggle human beings into the United States, if they are attempting to cross illegal drugs into this country, I want to make sure that we have the legal mechanism necessary to hold them accountable and to detain them to make sure that they do not pose a threat to this country or to our communities.
It's never a good sign when you start off with, I think what I'm saying is, well, just say it then, I think, because that makes it sound like you're confused about what you're actually saying. I do appreciate how he says that he wants to keep smuggling people across the border illegal, but not necessarily the people he's smuggling across the border. That would be, then he goes on about drugs. That would be akin to saying, I want to punish drug smugglers, but I want to legalize drugs. Okay, so once the drugs get into the country, they're perfectly legal. And if the people who are smuggling them are caught, then they go to jail. But you don't seize the drugs. You just let whoever their point of contact is on the U.S. side take them and go about their business. It doesn't make any sense. Smuggling somebody into the country is illegal, but smuggling yourself into the country is perfectly legal under Beto's rationale. Again, missing in there is a direct answer to Tapper's question, so he goes for bite at the apple number three.
But you disagree
but
with
the bigger picture.
You disagree with Julian Castro. You don't think that it should be repealed.
Yeah, I've answered the question. I do not think that it should be repealed, okay. But I'm trying to get to the heart of the issue, which is that
Got
we treat people humanely, that we improve our security not through walls and through cages, but by making sure that those who are at their most vulnerable, who are trying to follow our asylum laws, are able to do that, and that we then rewrite this country's immigration laws in our own image. Having people come out of the shadows demonstrably makes us safer. Having folks trust local law enforcement because they have no fear that it will lead to their deportation makes our communities stronger, more secure, and safer. And then it allows this country of immigrants and asylum seekers and refugees to truly live our values to the benefit not just of those immigrant families, but to the entire United States of America.
All right. Yeah. No, it finally answered the question. Then he said, we're not just a nation of immigrants. We're a nation of asylum seekers and refugees as well. I was none of those things. I am a native born American several generations in. But why let the facts stand in the way of a good story? They need to try and divide people. They need to try and manipulate people. It's such garbage. Poor Beto, though. He won't be an afterthought in this race. He had it won according to the polls, and he was the number one money raiser, and now all that money's just being set on fire. I don't know that he makes it to Iowa. It's kind of sad, kind of funny. Lastly today, I could do a whole hour on this, but this is just asinine. The Washington Post has an opinion column entitled 25 years ago, O.J. Simpson showed white Americans just how conditional their comfort with black athletes was. Yeah. I'm going to read that again because an adult human being that went through an editorial process wrote this. 25 years ago, O.J. Simpson showed white Americans just how conditional their comfort with black athletes was. It goes on to talk about everything you'd possibly imagine. It is by Philip Lamar Cunningham. He's assistant professor of media studies at Quinnipiac University in Hamden, Connecticut. Sorry, buddy, but Phil, if I can, it wasn't that anything, well, it showed how America became uncomfortable with somebody who committed a double murder. You know, that's a crazy thing, I realize, for you to understand, but it had nothing to do with white America. It had to do with the two Americans who nearly had their heads sawed off by O.J. Simpson. Just saying out there. Because, well, OJ's in the news again. It's the 25th anniversary of the murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. And he's also joined Twitter in his never-ending hunt for the real killers. And by the way, in an exchange with a parody OJ Simpson account, according to the New York Post, OJ Simpson sent a whole bunch of knife emojis in a direct message. It's in keeping with his brand, but I'm sure it's just racism, according to this professor at Quinnipiac. And he also said, you just wait. I'm going to blast your ass all over Twitter. He sent about a dozen knife emojis with the words, you next, O.J. Simpson. But don't worry, it's just white people. It's just their conditional comfort with black athletes who behead their ex-wives and their friends. returning glasses to them 25 years ago. This is the modern left, ladies and gentlemen. They are disgusting human beings, really, truly, and genuinely. But you aren't. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. Enter to win the Shannon Bream signed book. All that good stuff. Compliments, complaints, whatever you got. I take all comers. I appreciate it. Have a great Tuesday. We'll see you on Wednesday.
Let's start a real physical revolution if you're talking about it.